using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad Force Flex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Hello and welcome to the Influence Change at Work show. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you from Atlanta, Georgia, on Blog Talk Radio and YouTube. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals and teams to influence change at Enclaria. You can find more episodes like this one, plus additional resources to help you influence change at enclaria.com. Today, my guest is April Mills, who joins me from Portland, Oregon, to discuss the difference between driving people and driving change. April graduated from the University of Wisconsin with an engineering mechanics degree, and for almost 14 years, she proudly worked for the U.S. Navy at Puget Sound Naval Shipyard and Intermediate Maintenance Facility in Bremerton, Washington. While there, she held the titles of Nuclear Engineer, Command Strategic Planning Manager, Theory of Constraints, Implementation Manager, Workforce Development Program Managing Director, and Guiding Coalition Managing Director. I don't know how you fit all those on your business card.
Not at the same time.
In 2014, she joined Intel as a change coach and community steward, responsible for bringing cutting-edge change agency techniques across Intel's global locations and workforce of more than 100,000 people. Her blog at engineforchange.com, or at her blog, she shares her passion for creating positive change, outlining ways that anyone can drive change for themselves, their organizations, and their communities. She recently published a book called Everyone is a Change Agent. April, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Heather.
Now, the title of your book is Everyone is a Change Agent. So what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is that most folks I've met think that change is somebody else's job, right? Somebody with a title like change coach. Yeah. You know, you come in, help me change, but I don't change. You change things for me. And the message I want to get out with everyone as a change agent is that whether you're a CEO, an executive, a middle manager, a first line worker, or a community member, or a passionate mother of many young children, you can do whatever change you want in the world if you have some tips and techniques that will help you be more successful.
Right. Now, in the book, you make this key distinction between driving people and driving change. So can you give me an example of how those are different? What do those mean?
Yeah, so the first one, driving people, is what most people are accustomed to in organizations. It's when someone, someplace, decides a change should happen and then uses coercion of some sort, whether that's rewards or threats, to compel others to change. So it quickly devolves from let's change something to let's change someone, and being very specific about what someone else should do. That's driving people. I contrast that with driving change, which is where the change agent says, I'm going to make a change, and I'm going to clear the obstacles for others to join me. So this is the passionate leader that folks think of, who says, this is really important to me, here's why. Right? Simon Sinek talks about the why. These are the leaders who have a why, their personal why. And they say, and that's what motivates me to make the change. What are your obstacles to coming with me? Please join me. That's driving the change, where the focus is on the change and what I can do about it, what you can do about it, versus in driving people about focusing on how should the people change.
So just in your experience with different change management methodologies, how does that fit in with driving people versus driving change? I'm curious what your perspective is.
So I think most change management methodologies can be done either by driving people or driving change when they're successful. My bet is that it was based on driving change, and when they've been unsuccessful, it's been based on driving people. So you can do a change readiness survey and use that as part of your change management method. But if you do it to understand how I can clear the obstacles for others to join me, that's very different than how can I learn how to target my orders to compel them appropriately. So it's all about perspective as you approach the tools, not the tools.
So it's almost, you know, I'm thinking of words like persuasion and influence versus leadership, or, you know, are there words that you would use to describe the difference?
Well, what I like about the terms driving people and driving change is it gets away from the vagueness of leadership and persuasion and others, because you can persuade by driving change, which is being the role model, and you can persuade by driving people, which is how do I come up with a really good order or a really good reward that I dangle in front of you to get you to change. So I think a lot of those words, unfortunately, don't specify which method you're using. And so they're open to enough interpretation that they're dangerous. And we need better terms.
Well, you're talking about giving people orders. And so I'm reminded that you have experience working with the military. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering how much of your experience with the military informed your view of change?
Well, it's actually an interesting myth that in the military, it's a lot of orders and yes, sir, and following it blindly.
Yeah.
When you think about an aircraft carrier, it's manned primarily by young women and men who are just barely out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
You can't run a complex organization with 18 to 20-year-olds based on grizzly people giving orders over and over again. You need folks who understand why it's important and take initiative on their own. So it's a bit of a disconnect. What I found actually is very powerful in military leadership was the folks who said, I'm serving, here's why and what I'm doing with my service. Join me in accomplishing something great with your service. So it's a bit of a disconnect in people's minds who haven't been part of it, that it's all based on crisp, repeated orders. The best of it isn't. The best of it's based on driving change.
So what is it about driving change that really doesn't work? And how does that become, because it seems like that might be the default mode for how we try to do this. So how does it become that? How has it become that?
So driving people, you said driving change.
I'm sorry.
Yes, driving people. So I think driving people is the default because most folks see change happen by a senior leader saying thou shalt change, which means everyone else, not necessarily them. And giving that authority then to a change agent. And what does the change agent do first? The change agent sends a mandatory meeting notice declaring who needs to attend their mandatory meetings to discuss the mandatory spreadsheet of mandatory tasks that will be accomplished by the mandatory timeline or they will be appropriately punished.
Because the leader said so.
Because the leader said so. And you use their authority. The illustrations that I have in my book are meant to be silly but true, which is the change agent's holding a whip and forcing people forward, because a lot of times that authority is used as a weapon. It's do this or I'll tell on you. And I speak from experience. That's what I did the first time I was given the authority to make change. As I said, the big boss says do it, so you better do it and you better obey me or else. It didn't go well.
No.
I went looking for a better way. Yeah,
it's easy to default into that, dropping names, and you know, it's an easy crutch to just make everything mandatory because somebody somewhere with power said so. But you know, how do we get ourselves out of that?
Well, and what's really powerful is when you start to look at the results you get from mandatory, you see how much longer it takes and how low the participation is and how whatever you were passionate about in being the change agent gets little by little snuffed out as you have to keep forcing others to like it. You start to dislike it because you're forcing people. So a simple story I had, somebody I was working with learning about driving change, and they had a group where they were trying to get 50 people to mandatory training. And they had sent out the order which said, go to training or else. And everybody dutifully signed up, but then only less than 10 showed up. And they proceeded then to have the meeting of all of the leaders to say, how will we appropriately punish people if they don't go the second time we set up training? And this change agent who'd been experienced with driving change says, or have any of you taken the training? And do you know why you would go? Yeah. And so instead, the leader said, I'm going to training. Here's why. Please join me. And almost everyone showed up. So a simple but significant difference. If you want to lead folks forward, you have to actually lead by going to.
That's a great example. It's a simple.
Very simple.
Simple change in approach. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how is driving change better than driving people, and a little bit more about what that looks like?
Yeah. So in my book, I love to tell the story of what happened out in our community in Bremerton, where we leveraged the powerful difference. So we built an accessible playground for children with special needs. And the typical way citizens approach their government is often in an angry huff about what government is required to do and not doing. So there's a law which requires you to have accessible playgrounds. So if we had believed in driving people, we would have stormed into the mayor's office, pounded our fists on her desk, and demanded she serve these children. And then stood there, arms crossed, waiting for her to do something. And she probably would have created a committee, and they would have worked diligently for 6 months, gotten nowhere, and eventually given up, all in frustration. But instead, we knew about driving change. And so rather than going straight to the mayor, we went to the parks director. We said, we're passionate about creating a playground for kids of all abilities. We want to partner with you. What do you need from us in order to make this reality? And he laid out a very clear program. He said, we have no funding, so you need to fundraise for us. We don't know the design specs, so we would need help with that. And we need you to raise awareness in the community about it. And we shook hands on a cold February day in the Pacific Northwest with a drizzle outside. And 3.5 years later, we opened a $550,000 renovation to a local park that included an accessible playground, the first in that county for children with special needs. And it was all because we decided to say, we choose this change and we'll put our efforts into making it happen. So it might seem subtle, but it isn't. It's significant, the difference.
Yeah, well, no one really wants to be forced to do anything.
Right.
Just ask my kids.
And mine, yeah, exactly. Or husbands or partners or bosses or employees. It's so powerful, but we miss it because it seems as though it's permissible at work to order people. And the Outlook makes it easy. I don't blame the Microsoft programmers for it, but we've all defaulted into behaviors, which is mandatory. Attendance is default.
Yeah.
Meetings running forever is the default. And it gives you great authority over people to compel them to be places and do things. And I think we don't appreciate that power and wield it specifically.
Yeah. And I really like your example of the playground because it shows us that it's not just at work. This is all throughout our lives that we've got to not lean on that crutch of mandatory and authority and, you know, I'm just going to find ways to force you to do it.
Yeah.
Versus get more involvement and engagement from people.
Yeah. And lead by example.
Yes.
Yeah. And I found I ended up driving out the concept of driving people in my practice at work. I tried to focus on driving change in my community. And I missed one last place where I was focusing on driving people, and it was how I was driving myself to fitness goals. I would yell at myself if I had missed a workout, you know, create long lists of orders for what I was going to do to get healthier, and it wasn't working. So instead, now I've finally got my Fitbit, and I consider it my partner to help me make change happen versus my authority, right? Yep. But I think it's a powerful shift because I hadn't even realized how much I'd left it still going on and how I drove myself. You know, I will be disappointed in myself if I don't. So it's the last bastion of driving people that a lot of people face.
That's a great insight that we don't need to be make everything for ourselves mandatory and tell ourselves we're going to be disappointed if we don't.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So in the book, you say that driving change even isn't enough. So what else do we need to do to help make change happen?
So that's what the rest of the 7 change agent essentials walk people through. So drive change, not people, is the first one. But then as you move forward with your change, there's lots of simple strategies that a change agent can use to make it more likely their change will succeed. Things like protecting your change while it's still young, right? As you're fumbling through learning about it, you can't be out in the wind with everybody attacking and no safety net. So the concept of change buffers helps people see that when change has succeeded, chances are good it had some protection until it was strong enough to live on its own, because it's different. And different is often snuffed out in organizations, in behavior patterns, in routines that we're accustomed to, unless we protect them, right? Yeah. The Fitbit's my protection.
It's easy to do when it's new, when it's just an idea versus when it's started actually moving somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. So there's concepts like that. There's also simple things like setting a concrete goal. When I meet passionate change agents, sometimes they're really excited about doing something. And I say, okay, well, what specifically? You know, something. You can't just run around in a circle and hope to get someplace. So simple tactics like that, which is just declare, great, you want to climb mountains. Which mountain? By when? With who? If you can't specify that, you'll struggle to actually be at the top of a mountain someday. So simple things like that that I love to share in the book are just simple strategies to get you moving forward faster now that you're armed with driving change.
Great. So what other tips would you share with anyone who either wants to get started with being a change agent? You know, where do they even begin?
So I love using the book as the simple starting place to ground people in the concepts. It's a bit like a band's first album. I've been teaching and talking about it for years, and I'm proud of the fact that it's finally down on paper and able to scale so folks don't have to know me to know it. It can be a simple starting place. I think a lot of the content out there for change agents is very dense, or it's written for CEOs. And I know I struggled over the years with, so I read these books, but until I'm the CEO, I can't do anything.
Right.
It felt frustrating. So I intended it to be the place where we can all start, regardless of where we're at, and then build and move on from there. That's what I love. I love connecting with the folks who, whether it's reading the blog posts, I've got over 600 blog posts, which span from simple ideas to rants. There's actually a whole category on rants because I think we should rant every now and then as change agents. to connect with our frustration. So that's what I love to share with folks, is those are different things that I've put out there into the world to help people not feel so alone as they try to make a change.
Okay. Well, speaking of rants and frustrations, I'm curious, what are some of your biggest pet peeves about change, or what are the biggest frustrations that you've seen in your career?
Well, that could get us on a whole different podcast series, maybe.
Top three,
I think that the things that make my heart hurt are places where someone has given up on something that they were really passionate about.
Yeah.
So finding them and giving them confidence that they don't have to keep hoping for that promotion before they can do something. That's been powerful, I think, because I find folks that are trapped by the excuses for why they can't. There's a whole actually really large chapter in the book about some of the excuses. That's a bit of those stored up situations that I've encountered where people have said, well, I can't because, and I've tried to use the engineering concept of let's troubleshoot this and come up with a workaround to your excuse and get you running as a change agent. So I've tried to store up a lot of those examples there.
That's been my advice when people ask me, you know, maybe they're a project manager or an engineer or, you know, wherever they are in their organization, and they say, you know, how do I become a change agent? And my advice is always start where you are. Yeah. And just try to make an impact within the span of your own influence where you are in your own job. And once you learn how to do that, then you can boost that into more of a change agent type of career.
Yep.
But it's not something that you can just jump into on its own. I mean, you've just got to start somewhere.
Right.
So again, don't make, like you said, don't make excuses. Let's figure out how to get it done.
Yep. Yep. Do what you can with what you have, where you are, the change agent's motto. Right. And carve your little stream into a river. That was the span of my career, is I, you know, was trying to solve simple problems, maybe not entirely simple, challenges as an engineer, and then realized that there was a space next to that, which was how to get the work done, and tried to solve problems there, and then just tried to keep expanding out what problems I was willing to try and solve. And yeah, each time learning a lot and stumbling a lot and needing to be picked up by good friends and great leaders who are willing to say, keep going and keep trying. And if I can share a little bit of that enthusiasm with the world so that they can have that confidence that I was lucky enough to be given by those great people, and that makes my day.
Great. Yeah, we both have similar experiences because I started as an engineer as well. And so we have that technical background, and I think we both realize that you can't just design something with the math and say, here you go. But you actually have to work with people and drive change instead of people, because the math is leans toward the mandatory side. Like, do this because it makes sense because the numbers add up.
Right. Right. And John Cotter talked about that in his Heart of Change book, right? Which really opened that up for a lot of folks who were kept saying, you know, just give me the model and I'll follow the recipe. And it isn't as simple as that. You have to reach people's hearts. But I'd argue this step before reaching other people's hearts is reaching your own, which is, why do you care? Why are you putting your energy into it?
Yeah.
And if you don't have your reason why, that's what Sinek tries to get after with folks, right? If you don't have your reason why should anyone else?
Exactly.
Start there. And then from there, lots of great things come.
Yeah, that's. I have a change readiness assessment, and part of that is just as a change agent, are you ready for change? And one element is, do you care about this, or is it just your job?
Right.
You know, how involved? How much do you actually care about whether or not this change, because of the change that it is, how much do you care that it actually gets implemented? So it's very important. Have your own buy-in. How else can you convince someone else?
Right. Yeah. Well, and sometimes I've found change agents fooling themselves. They'll say, well, I love change, and they don't. I say, okay, what about what you do? Are you changing? Or is your passion for change in watching them change? You have to think about that sometimes, because as a change agent, if you're just trying to bring them up to where you're at, that's not you embracing change. You embracing change would be, what am I going to learn? What am I going to adapt as I encounter folks who maybe are nervous about this change? They've got what I call scar tissue from the people who've tried to force them before, so they distrust change agents. And how am I going to learn new techniques and tips and ways to win them to join me? This is not about servants. It's about followers. Right, and followers are very different. You treat them very differently than you treat your change servants, or conscripts, which is what a lot of people end up making the other people in their organizations when they drive people.
Great. So anything else to tie a bow on the conversation?
I would encourage everybody to think about the fact that you can be a change agent. If you already are one and you're struggling for how do I create more like me, I love everyone as a change agent, because it helps everybody see it. It's written for everybody, no matter who you are or what you do. If you're part of a big organization or a small one, you want to make change in your personal life or professional life or community, I tried to write it where it was widely applicable because I think it is widely applicable. It's about human beings trying to do the best they can with what they have, where they are, to make their world better. And I'm grateful to be on that journey with all of you.
Great. And I enjoyed the book and I felt like there was a lot of wisdom in there, and I learned something from learning it. So, or from reading it. So.
And I really appreciate your support for it early on. One of the first readers of the book. So thank you so much, Heather, for being with me on this journey.
Well, thanks for sharing it with me. So where can people who are watching or listening, where can they learn more or connect with you?
So I've still got my blog, engine-for-change.com. So engineforchange.com. And I don't blog on there nearly as much as I used to, but there is all the contact information there about how to get the book, how to reach out to me, and a wealth of content and links to YouTube keynote videos and other sites where they can get more information on who I am and what I'm doing, and a wealth of content. Maybe someday when all of my four children are a little older, I'll get an actual moment to sit down again and blog. People who know how old my children are will see my blogging amounts drop drastically as the number of children increased. It's just a reality we face as working moms. So.
Right. Well, April, thanks so much for being on the show. I've really enjoyed our conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. And thank you for listening or watching to the Influence Change at Work show. If you'd like to find more resources to help you influence change in your organization, including individual coaching, team workshops, and upcoming training events, please visit inclaria.com. While you're there, sign up for the monthly newsletter and you'll get a free change readiness assessment, which I mentioned earlier, to find out if your change initiative is set up for success. Until next time, best wishes on your change initiative. Take care.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey.
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy.
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky.
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty.
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy.
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer odor control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey.
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy.
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky.
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty.
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy.
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer odor control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty. Dude.